This is On the Other Hand. A podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us today as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, Glenn White, and I'm here with my co-host, April Chatham Carpenter. As you know, on our podcast, April and I interview community leaders in Arkansas who in some way help work towards solutions across various political or other divides, or who in other ways reach across various divisions within our community. So today we have a very special guest. April, who is that?
Well, Glenn, I'm really excited today. We have Republican Senator Breanne Davis, and she's from Russellville. She represents District 25, and Senator Davis, among other roles that she plays, she's chair of the Senate Efficiency Committee. And the thing I think that most interested us, given our area of emphasis on our podcast, was also her role as co-chair of the Arkansas Future Caucus in the legislature. We'll talk to her about that. That's a bipartisan group that's committed to collaborating across partisan lines to look at specific policy results. And she's also one of the sponsors of Governor Sanders' signature education law, the LEARNS Act. So welcome to On the Other Hand, Breanne.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here today.
So we always like to start off with a kind of introduction question to yourself. So tell us a little bit about your early life, how it led into your interest in politics, how you got interested in doing this work in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I've honestly been interested in politics from a young age. I remember being in elementary school, having, you know, a heightened interest in politics. And so that kind of led to high school, being involved with teenage Republicans, then in college Republicans, and, you know, eventually being the Pope County Republican chairman years ago, and just really working from there. And so I'm a firm believer that if we don't have good people running for office, then, you know, what do we have? We have to have normal citizens running for office, good people that are involved in community and want to make things better. So I believe we just have to have people step up and willing to take a risk and put their name on the ballot and run for office. And so when I was 25, I had a one-year-old and wanted to really start getting involved in his education early. So I decided to run for school board and was served on the Russellville School Board for 9 years before coming to the Arkansas State Senate. And I've been in the State Senate now for almost 6 years. But even back then, as a 25-year-old, I believe we all have a part to play in our community. We all have different roles. And that looks different for everyone. And for me, the desire to jump in and run for office and serve in elected capacity was a role that I felt I wanted to play, which is really what led me there.
Well, thank you for that. And I wonder, anything in your family that made you be interested in politics as well?
You know, looking back, my dad's family, they're all from the Hector Dover area, and they for years have served as mayor and on school boards and all kinds of things, which I didn't know that growing up or necessarily know them. But it is funny. It might be in our blood a little bit. So,
yeah, DNA. So heart. I think it's interesting when people do this. And I really think all politics is local anyway. So it's great to hear people that actually think they can make a difference. And that's why they want to serve. So thank you for your service time over the years and all those various capacities. Well, another personal thing, I saw somewhere that you love to play saxophone. You've done that for quite a few years. You still play?
I don't still play. I do love the alto sax. I played all through, you know, school, in college, played in a church orchestra for a while. But that's something you've really got to put time into and practice regularly to kind of keep up your, you know, strength in your mouth on your embouchure, being able to play correctly. And so I don't play anymore. I passed my saxophone along to someone young who was wanting to play themselves, and hope that it gives them all the enjoyment that it gave me.
Oh, well, awesome. I could say the same thing about my violin playing in the past, except
Yes.
I still have the violin. But yeah, it did provide a lot of enjoyment at the time, and a lot of hard work when we're in those kinds of bands and orchestras. So, well, as you know, on this podcast, we talk with community leaders who, in some way, work across various divisions, especially political ones, and they usually, you know, when we're talking to them, we're really talking about how we talk civilly to others who are different from us in some way. And so we found a quote from you that seemed quite consistent with that approach. And I think many citizens would love to see more of this quote's attitude from our leaders and government officials. So I'm going to read the quote, and then I want to ask you a question to follow up on it. This is the quote: "I wish we would fight less. It overshadows all of the amazing things that we are doing." I wish we would fight less. It overshadows all the amazing things we're doing, which I think a lot of us would say at all levels of politics these days that we wish that. So could you tell us a bit about how you demonstrate that in your values and your work, this respect for and willingness to work with others despite having differences that you may have with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, most of the issues that we deal with in politics are issues that we don't disagree on. But those aren't, you know, the fun things that get the headlines. It's the controversy, it's the division, the fighting. That's what gets the headlines. And so a lot of the good work that we are doing, it just never makes it to the paper. It's not something that, you know, I guess people feel like others will read. I don't know, you know, just that's maybe not what sells, unfortunately. So for me, I think the first thing is finding commonalities. And I think that's fairly easy. I mean, in politics, I sort of know what I'm going to disagree with my fellow Democrat colleagues on. You know, it's not like there's the bigger issues we know we're, you know, typically going to disagree on. But there's plenty of other things that, you know, are gray that we may see eye to eye or see a little bit different. And so one, look for commonalities. And then two, we do a lot of, you know, pitching ideas. So I'll have members, you know, a member come and say, okay, I've really been working on this bill. I just want you to hear me out. Can you sit down? Can you take 15 minutes, talk it out with me, just hear what I have to say. And it's maybe about an issue that's like a borderline, you know? And so I'll say, yes, I will sit down and hear what you have to say about it. And vice versa, I'll do the same to other members. And so I just never say no to that. I try to walk in with an open mind, and they already know maybe it's a gray area if it has to deal with, you know, voter registration stuff or things like that, where, you know, the devil is in the details and we want to make sure to get that right. And there are some differences amongst parties on that issue. But I always think it's like, I think it's worth listening to. And so I will sit down and do that. And I just say, like, constituents are my priority. It's all of our priorities as senators, but members are really my second priority. And I really work hard on my relationships with other senators and House members, because if I don't have good relationships with them, if I'm not willing to sit down and work with them or listen to them, then they're probably not going to be willing to do the same with me. And if they don't, then I cannot effectively advocate for my constituents and, you know, what they expect me to do and how they expect me to work. And so that is sort of my approach, is just being willing to listen and just never say no. When a member says, can I talk to you about this bill or this issue? I say, yes, I will sit and listen to what you have to say. And that's produced good results so far for me.
Oh, so good suggestions there. So do you feel like that you have built relationships then that are more than just professional across the aisle?
Yeah, I do think so. I feel like I have some trusted relationships across the aisle, and really where I'm able to just ask, like on even a bill that I just think is, you know, so radical, I can't understand how the other side can see it in any other way different than what I see it. You know, I can sit down and say, okay, can you just, this is what I see when I read this. Can you just help me understand what you see? And it's not, they know they're not trying to change my mind. I'm not looking to have my mind changed. I know exactly what I feel about that issue, but I just cannot wrap my head around how they can come to terms with that bill or that issue. And so I just am curious, honestly. And so I'm able to, you know, have those trusted relationships where I can say, can you just explain this to me from your point of view? Because I'm like, I just can't understand it, you know, and that's pretty good conversations. And like I said, it's not about changing each other's minds. I just have a little bit more of a depth of understanding about why they think something. And that's been good.
Well, Brianne, it sounds like you've been going to some Brave Angels workshops, the way you take that approach, because that's exactly the kind of things we talk about is don't try to change the other person's mind. You're probably not going to, and you maybe even alienate them, make them further away, but really be curious and try to understand where they're coming from. So that's, I really appreciate hearing that. Now, perhaps along those lines, we had mentioned at the start when we were introducing you that you are, I believe, co-chair of the Arkansas Future Caucus, and that includes Aaron Pilkington, Jamie Scott, and Clark Tucker. In fact, I think Clark mentioned you specifically when we had him on here a while back. Could you tell us a little bit about the work that you all are doing in the Arkansas Future Caucus and how you're collaborating across, you know, your partisan lines, just basically how that's going? Because given the polarized environment that we have right now, that's not something you're normally going to hear about.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, I mean, it's so cool. Arkansas actually has one of the younger legislatures in the country, which, you know, we've realized through our work with the Future Caucus, looking at other states. I can't remember the exact number, but I want to say it's around like 44 or so members under the age of 45 out of 135. And that's, you know, fairly young when you look across the country. And so, I mean, we had over 30 bills this session that we considered future caucus bills. And really it just started. I mean, we're all pretty similar in our philosophy. I mean, there's times to be partisan, certainly. But then we also sort of are willing to be respectful and have conversations with each other, the future caucus co-chairs. And so we just, at the beginning of session last year, well, we did it the previous session as well, but we just sat down in a room together and said, okay, what are some things we're working on that we're interested in? Because, you know, in the interim, when we're not in session for that basically year and a half, we're all at home, you know, working on new issues are coming up and we're drafting bills and sort of getting things ready as we go for session. And so, so we kind of just say, what are some things we've been working on? What do we think we could throw in the pot as a future caucus bill? Like, and so we'll kind of pitch our ideas and, say, what about this? Are we all on board with this? Yes. What about this? Can we, you know, and maybe some ideas that aren't fully developed yet, we'll just say like, hey, I'm hearing things about this issue. I don't honestly know how to handle it because it's kind of, you know, maybe it's dealing with some kind of criminal law and it's a little more entailed, you know, a little more detailed and maybe has to do with underage kids. And like, if this thing happens, and what about this? You know, we kind of talk through a lot of those things because we see a lot of this stuff going on in schools with harassment and bullying and, you know, maybe even some like we see videos being released of underage kids and stuff like that. So just saying like, where are we at on the law? Because I think like, I don't think any of us really at the end of the day would disagree with wanting to protect kids underage from, you know, some of the things we're seeing in schools happen. But it's just getting it right where it makes sense to be litigated, makes sense that it's fair. It isn't ruining someone, you know, like working through those details is really important. And I would say is not, a partisan thing. It's something that we all want to come to the table on together. So we look at stuff like that and, you know, maybe maternal health issues, like we're all sort of on the same page, especially the younger members. We sort of view like Medicaid and expanding maternal health and things like that in a different way. And so we tend to be on similar pages with that stuff. So just sitting down and throwing all our ideas in the pot and putting it together. I mean, that's sort of what we do, and it works well for us.
So if I'm getting this right, you help me out on this. It sounds like number one, this is a caucus of young up and coming legislators, and then you shared the willingness and determination to listen to each other, to be respectful, and to see if you can find common ground. And then where you do find some potential for working together on policies, then you focus on that, but you also go in your own separate ways with your own party when you have different. Is that kind of basically it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Future Caucus focuses, it's about millennials and Gen Zers and bringing them together to sort of bridge this political divide. And so that is the focus of the Future Caucus, is looking for ways to work together. I mean, so yeah, that's essentially what we do. And we just all put our names on as co-sponsors. So it shows like we're all in this together, and we move forward with those things.
Well, I really appreciate the work you're doing on that. That's great to hear that we have something like that going on anywhere in this country, especially in Arkansas. So I wonder then, given your experience there with that kind of coalition that you've built within the legislature, any thoughts about how we can continue to build coalitions like that elsewhere in government or even outside of government? For instance, I think Braver Angels, you know, our national organization that we are affiliated with, does some of that coalition building as well. What other ways can we build those coalitions?
I think just looking for, I don't know, just different opportunities. I mean, I think the biggest thing is like turn off social media and go sit and talk to people face to face, to be honest. I mean, I think that is just devastating to relationships and to real information and an understanding. I mean, I say all the time to people, I'm like, look, I am more than happy. Like I'll have any conversation and I'm more than happy to disagree or debate based on facts, but I am unwilling to disagree and debate on misinformation. And that is just so much of, I mean, time spent is just the amount of misinformation that you're constantly having to combat. And you can't convince people otherwise because they read it on Facebook. And so I say, gosh, just getting back to sitting down at a table, making eye contact with others and having those real conversations is such a big deal. But I mean, how do you move the needle on that? I mean, it's people that have to be willing to do that. But I say getting plugged in community, even if it's, I mean, just having your Braver Angels plug in different capacities and say like, where are you interested in serving? Not necessarily in an elected capacity. I mean, but just, you know, what boards are you willing to serve on? Where are you willing to spend some time? And just getting entrenched in those ways, and helping navigate conversation and work towards the betterment of community. I think getting involved is a big deal. It's important.
Well, I appreciate a number of things about that, but I really like the idea that you want to deal with facts rather than misinformation, because, man, that has always been a problem. We've known that propaganda has worked for, you know, centuries and centuries, but with our current technological environment, it is just rampant. Social media is certainly a prime candidate for a big influence there, but it's everywhere. And we could probably go in a whole different direction with this conversation. Maybe we shouldn't, because there's so much misinformation coming now. Just you pick up the morning paper, for those who still read the newspaper, and you see, you know, people being quoted with things that are obviously not true. It's a real challenge. So I appreciate your value on facts rather than misinformation. Mm-hmm. Given all the extreme polarization and developing enmity we have across divisions these days, this is a real challenging time, I think, for all of us, certainly for you who serve in government. So I wonder if you have any thoughts on how those of y'all in government, as well as everyone in society, you know, what can we do to maintain the open-mindedness that we need to work our way out of this really dysfunctional place we've gotten ourselves in?
Yeah. I still think it, you know, again, goes back to putting down the phones. And I mean, if you want to talk about being open-minded, I mean, we all know what algorithms do. We know that if we click on one thing, it pushes more and more information of that to us. And And I think it's just the 24-hour news cycle, the social media, everything is just so hostile, and it demands that you pick a side. It demands that you have really strong feelings about something. And I've noticed an interesting shift in my own party that, you know, I'll get during session tons of emails on a bill that is not a party platform bill. It's maybe something that's worth debate. It's something that needs to be improved. And I will just get emails that are like, you know, get out of our party, you rhino. Like, how dare you? You're not a Republican. And it's pretty wild to me. I mean, I was throwing candy out at parades in high school for people running for office then, like that. I've been around the Republican Party for a very long time. And, you know, in the days when we were a super minority, and I've seen and been part of the blood, sweat, and tears that we've put in to move us to where we are now. And it is just interesting. I'm grateful, you know, for our party growth in the state. But it is interesting the number of people that don't even understand the history of where we were and how far we've come. And then to me, I'm like, you know, the Republican Party is a party of, you know, ideas and free thought and healthy debate and, you know, just like grappling with different things that to work through and say, you know, where are we on this and having those different ideas. And so I call them the 100%ers, the emails and stuff that I get from people that tell me to get out of the party because they disagree with the way I'm voting on one bill that is not even part of our party platform. And they want you to agree with them 100% of the time. And that's why I call them the 100%ers. And that's just how unrealistic is that? I mean, there's no two people think exactly the same. And we vote on, you know, 2,000 bills a session, and I'm supposed to agree exactly with every single person on everything, every single bill. Otherwise, I'm not a real Republican. I mean, that's complete insanity. And so much as tell them that back in my emails, I'm always respectful and kind, but I just say like, hey, we disagree on this one issue. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with you about it. But it's okay that we disagree. Like, we should have debate and thought on this. And so it's an interesting shift that we've taken, on this idea that we should all be in line 100% of the time on every single thing. And that's radical to me. I don't understand that.
It certainly is not the way that our government was initially, formed. And, you know, when I think about our Democratic Republic, it was built with the idea of competing branches of government, you know, other ways of trying to balance those competing interests. There was a strong desire to actually help our country to keep from evolving into some kind of autocracy where we all thought the same way. And it was built on the idea that we had to compromise. We sometimes needed to do that in order to get things done. And I'm not hearing you really talk so much about the compromising part, but about the nuances between us and how we are, you know, how we actually can be different from each other and talk through and have healthy debate on things. And thank you for sharing that. And I do think that when you do change or move towards the other side, you can get criticized in today's environment of needing to almost run for re-election as soon as you are elected. So I'm just curious, there's a lot that I just said that you might want to respond to, but the role of compromise in a democracy, you know, are there specific things that you shouldn't compromise on? How do you kind of weigh that out in your own life?
Yeah, to me, compromise is very important. I mean, I've amended so many of my bills of members saying, hey, I'm uncomfortable with this, but good with that. And I weigh each individual thing. Like, how does that change the goal of my bill? Like, what I'm trying to do? Am I willing to live with that compromise? And so compromise is just so important in politics. I mean, I can have a bill that I think is wonderful, but if I'm the only one that thinks that, I will not get it passed. You know, I've got to have 18 votes in the Senate and I've got to have 51 votes in the House. And so it's important to be open to compromise. I think if you dig your heels in the sand, then good luck to you. You know, the things to me that I just will not compromise on are things that I just call like core value issues. I mean, there are things that I truly believe they are, you know, issues on values, on morality. And those are the things that I will not compromise on. I think it's, and I think most people would hold the line there. I mean, I think that's sort of where, but those are the bigger issues that we generally know about that do create this huge divide, in partisan, you know, in parties, but also sometimes within our own party a little bit, we've got different views on things. But those are the issues that traditionally, I mean, that's what is going to get the headlines. I mean, we see it right now in the right to life stuff. You know, we're talking about abortion versus not, and those are the things that generally I think all sides are unwilling to compromise on because we hold it as a core value to who we are and what we believe. And so for me, those are the things that if I compromise on stuff like that, I mean, I won't sleep at night. But everything else is up for grabs in the sense of it's worth the conversation and weighing individually each time. Is this worth the compromise? And those are the more non-consequential things, you know, that we're not talking about those core values, but just trying to come to an agreement and move some stuff forward.
Yeah, I think about even the way that I grew up and how many times we were kind of looking at candidates through the lens of like only one value. And I can't vote for that person if they don't support that one value, and not looking at their whole kind of career or their whole kinds of things that they voted for. You mentioned that you sometimes would be you know, called a rhino by the 100%ers, as you mentioned earlier. How do you deal with those criticisms personally? Because I'm sure that at least they would kind of start eating at me after a while.
Yeah, it certainly takes a toll. I mean, you have to have very thick skin to be in politics, especially the day and age. I mean, people can reach you anywhere. We're, you know, on social media or email, my cell phone. I have one phone and it's mine. I answer it. It's online. People think when they're calling it that they're calling my secretary. And as I say, I am my own secretary. We don't have staff that does that for us. And so honestly, we are accessible in a way, you know, just because it's the year 2024 that people haven't been in the past. And so it does take a toll on you. For me, you know, most of it doesn't bother me. It's people I don't know emailing me, you know, hateful things, and I'll, you know, they'll never show their face. And if, you know, but I think what gets me the most is people I do know who I know have my number and maybe post and say really, you know, hateful things. But they didn't take the time to call me first and say, hey, can you help me understand this? And, you know, I think that's, for me, it has changed me a lot. I would do that before, but I am more vigilant about it now. If somebody tells me something about somebody, like this is going on, I just will say, you know what, that doesn't sound like them. I'm going to call them and ask them about it. And I'm just more willing to stand up vocally and instead of just saying, huh, that, you know, and letting it go, I just try to stand up and say, like, that doesn't sound like them. And that doesn't sound like something they do. You need to probably ask them, because the accusations and things that get made about you is just, I mean, it's wild to me. And it's wild that people I know that have my phone number, that see me at the ball field or at the grocery store, you know, that they didn't say, that doesn't sound like Brian, you know, like, let me call her and check in on that. And that's the stuff that sort of wears me down over the years. The other stuff, you know, emails from people I don't know, you know, just keyboard warriors, that doesn't bother me. But it's the people I know and have relationships with that one gets me.
Well, Glenn, that's about as much time as we have for the first part of our conversation with Breanne Davis. And my goodness, some rich things already in that first episode. I didn't realize that Arkansas had one of the youngest legislatures in the U.S., with many of them being under 45. And it was exciting to hear about the work of the future caucus as they are willing to have conversations across the aisle and build coalitions, and really build them through building relationships. I really also loved what she talked about in terms of asking the question, can you help me understand what you see? That question that helps us lead with curiosity within trusted relationships.
In particular, I really appreciated hearing from her that she's seeing a lot of hostility and no compromise attitudes within her own party, which she calls the 100 percenters. And I think that's an important thing. It's kind of like an extreme form of perfectionism that does not allow, your elected official to have any nuances or compromises, that everything has to be 100% by a person's standards. And of course, that's impossible. So I suspect she would agree that not only she, but all the other people in government are facing that same problem. I think that's an important point that was made.
She also talked about how the Republican Party traditionally has been a party in which free ideas and healthy debate were part of it, but that our 24-hour news cycle really has demanded that you tend to pick a side. So lots of good things that I hope people will take away from this first part of our conversation.
And even though she talked about the Republicans, she made the point, and it's absolutely true, that we see that same thing going on in the other party, the Democrats, and other portions of society as well.
Well, thanks for joining us on today's edition of On the Other Hand. This was the first part of our conversation with Breanne Davis. Be sure to check out the second part of this conversation with Breanne, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. You can find us on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website, and that's at arkansas.braverangels.org, or you can find us on many popular podcast sites.
When you visit our website, in addition to links to all their episodes, you'll find a link to email us at otherhandar@gmail.com, where you can provide program feedback or suggest speakers or topics to us. Now, in the meantime, I want to suggest that a previous interview you might want to check out is a conversation we had a while back with Monica Guzman, who is a Braver Angels national leader and author of the book, I Never Thought of It That Way. In that book, Monica focuses on the real value of using curiosity to help us with our conversations across the political aisle. And you can find that conversation in episodes 44 and 45.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White.
And April Chatham Carpenter.
Let's each do our part to bring our community closer together.